Grander Radio with your guy, DJ Metro. And on the phone with me, I have the one and only Mr. John Covington. What's going on, sir?
Dougie Doug, what's going on? You know, right away, I got a bone to pick because I've been listening and I'm just now getting on here.
Oh, snap.
But anyway. Yeah, man. Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Good morning. It's definitely a pleasure, and we go way back. So, you know, you're man. One of my top guys. Matter of fact, let me ask you this. You are affectionately known as Uncle John. How did that come about? I just need to know.
I have zero idea. I have no idea how that came about, but it's like prevalent, and the interesting thing is there are people who technically I am not old enough to be their Uncle John, but right. They even call me Uncle John, you know, folks in their 50s, and I'm like, wait a second, I'm not that much older. But you know what? I don't know, man. And it's like around the country. I don't know how it happened, when it happened. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know. I don't know how that happened.
I definitely know the community that I'm from. Everybody calls you Uncle John. Everybody.
It's crazy. It's crazy. You know, my daughter used to say when she was a kid, she's like, why are these people calling my daddy Uncle John?
Right.
She said she kind of had a problem with it, you know, but as she got older, she said she understood, and she understood the respect and the affection that came along with it, you know. So I don't know, man. I never asked other folks to call me Uncle John.
Right.
It's not something that I ask people to do. It's just something that they just naturally did. It's either Uncle John or Pops or OG or something in that vein. But that's a great question. Nobody ever asks me that question.
Wow. Okay, great. So in case you guys don't know John is a dynamic, multi-hyphenated creative whose storytelling moves seamlessly across radio, television, and film. And we're here talking about Black Man. And as the director, producer of the documentary Black Man, he brings a powerful and intimate lens to the lived experiences of Black men in America, capturing their resilience, humanity, and inner life with honesty and purpose. Let's get into that, Black Man.
Man, you're so good. You're so good. You know, I smile because I remember when you and I just had dreams of doing some of the things that we've been fortunate enough to do.
Yeah.
And I know you're talking to me, but I just want to inject your photography skills. You are the GOAT. And to think, you know, this brother is from Muskegon, Michigan, you know, where we're both from. It's just, you know, you've been doing my headshot since the beginning. You did my first headshot, my wow. very first headshot, wow. and you did my last headshot.
Right.
You know, and okay. I've had a couple of people, you know, in between in LA, et cetera, do them, but you're the GOAT.
Well,
and so I know you're talking about me and my skills, but it's just, we've been on this road together for a long time, man. I just get excited when I get an opportunity to talk to people that I actually know, that like yeah. I know for real.
Right.
And so, yeah, that was very impressive, that introduction there. But yeah, I'm ready, man. I'm ready. Let's go.
Yeah. So now Black Man is an awesome film. I had the chance to check it out, and it was thought provoking, and a lot of the people I knew in that film. So what was the moment or experience that made you say, I have to create a documentary regarding Black men?
Well, first let me say, you saw like 8 versions ago.
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen it, if you didn't see it in 2025, the end of 2025, the version that the NAACP Image Award screened, you haven't seen it. It's very much like it was in the beginning, and the same substance, but I've tweaked some things. This is like my eighth version of the film.
Okay.
And I just literally became happy with the film, where I sit and watch it and go, wow, this is actually pretty good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And but anyway, I think, well, the film, it started as a 3-minute loop to accompany a still art exhibit at the Muskegon Museum of Arts. That's what it started as. And so they hired me for 3 days, and it was, if you got time, they sent out emails to everybody. If you got time, hey, stop by and see John. He wants to get some footage for a loop that we're going to use to accompany the art exhibit while people are waiting to enter. And that's how it started. Mm. And believe it or not, a lot of the men who were part of the art exhibit declined to come speak with me on camera. Rodney Savage, I'm going to just call him out. For example, Rodney's like, oh, that's my big brother. I talk to him all the time. I'll talk to him sometime. You know, I don't have time today. I'm busy, whatever. And a lot of cats didn't bother to stop and talk to me because they were like, oh, that's just our bro. And, you know. But again, it was a 3-minute loop at that time. Well, those who did decide to come talk to me in the original version, among them Bishop Wells. And Bishop Wells was the second or third guy that I interviewed the first day. And the interviews were all roughly 45 minutes to an hour. And Bishop Wells, I think he was the second guy, he walked out of there crying. He was the second guy to walk out crying.
Wow.
And I said, I just had a moment, and I said, this is more than a 3-minute loop. I believe what we're dealing with here, I can turn into a documentary.
Mm.
And that process started 6 years ago. I went in and told Judith Hayner, who was the executive director of the art museum at that time. She was on her way out. She was retiring, I think, after 20 plus years. One of the most dynamic women you can meet in life anywhere, but certainly in Muskegon County. And I walked into her office, her door was open, and I walked in, and one of the first things she said to me was, what's going on in there? Because she's got her door open and she sees these men walking out very emotional.
Right.
We got a makeshift office at the art museum. And I said, if you guys would like to renegotiate, I can turn this into, I think I can turn this into a documentary. We've got more than a 3-minute loop here. And that's what began this process.
Wow.
And 8 versions later, 6 years later, here I am.
It really sounds like I need to check out the latest version of this documentary.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Now, where can I find it? Let me just ask that right off the bat.
Well, right now it's on tour.
Okay,
it's touring around, but you know, for you, we can make it happen where you can see it anytime.
Okay.
But it's currently on tour, and we may do some other things. We're considering some other things, a Black Man podcast, among other things, because everywhere the film screens, people say this does not need to be a one-off, and we need more of this. And so some of the cities that it's slated to go to, next month, Philadelphia, hadn't made the rounds to Philadelphia, Chicago, we're in conversations with Chicago. Actually, we have a meeting coming up very soon about Chicago, and it's scheduled to go to multiple cities in Florida at the end of next month as well, Jacksonville, Gainesville, some other city that they're working out the details for the end of February. So people can see it. Oh, and it may be coming to Grand Rapids as well.
Okay.
Sometime in February for a limited engagement screening. I'll know more about that this coming week as well. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm jumping ahead of myself real quick, but you know, I watched one of your other interviews and you regarded Jason Wilson's book. Now, my question to you is there a Black man book on the horizon? Maybe. Okay.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Wow, Doug. Wow, boy, you did your homework.
Yeah,
maybe. Shame to say, in that interview, I couldn't think of Jason's. I couldn't think of the book. I said, man, I'm not going to send this interview to him.
Right.
But, could think of the name of the book. But yeah. Yeah, Jason is somebody I consider a brother and a friend. We don't talk often, but we do text and more than anything. And I feel like we're on the same, we have the same mental wavelength as it comes to our Black men, our brothers. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that this would be part of my mission in life, Doug, but it is. You know, when you think of most of what I've been involved with, has something to do with empowering brothers who look like me.
Right. And that is a very true statement, because I've known you for years, and I've seen how you interact with us and give everybody the most sound advice that they will ever receive. You know, and so it's just, you're just awesome. You know, in what you
do. Oh, brother.
Yeah. You're
man,
awesome.
You know I'm emotional. You know I'm know like you old are. Now. And so it's true, man. It's true. And got grandkids, and I got a granddaughter now.
Yeah.
I look at and I just melt.
Okay.
I just melt, man.
Yeah.
Something. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So let's
thank you.
Yes, sir. So the title Black Man is a powerful and direct. It's powerful and direct, rather. What does it mean to you, and how did you want the audience to feel when they first heard it?
I didn't know how I wanted them to feel when they first heard it. I hadn't gotten that far in my thoughts, Doug.
Mm-hmm.
But now I want them to feel, if they are Black male, I want them to feel empowered. If they are Black woman, I want them to feel proud with understanding, a better understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are Caucasian, I want them to feel humanity.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, because, and I heard you say that 66-year-old woman, maybe 70, right? She hadn't experienced in person a Black male. And
correct. She hadn't gotten to know one.
Yeah.
She didn't really know. She had never really had a conversation, not a real conversation with one.
Right. So with that being said, the narrative that's put out on mass media is always negative, as you had stated in that prior interview, and you're changing the thought process of non-Black people with this documentary.
Who knew?
Who knew? Well, I think more information and projects like this right here need to get out to the masses, because we have been deemed unfit, if you will, or in a particular light, a negative light. Mm-hmm. And documentaries like this and information like this, sheds a much better view of who we are and what we do. So
absolutely. Yeah. Who knew that what I thought would be just a local project or regional at best would travel the country? It's been the cities all over the country,
but you know,
DC, Detroit, LA multiple times, Orlando, Florida, Austin, Texas, and it goes on and on, Baltimore, and who knew? And I think, and you and I both agree that the arts are, if not the best way, the arts are a powerful way to enlighten people.
Mm-hmm.
through the arts,
right?
Multimedia, and I had no idea, man. I can't say, when people say, well, did you know that it would have this type of impact? Absolutely not. I had no idea. And to think that it's been to the Farnthaw in our hometown twice over the last 5 years since it came out, and an audience of 1,000+ each time, with a mixture of an audience. I was told that one church group, a majority Caucasian church group, large church in Muskegon, said that they were going to attend the Black History Month special last year. Was that 2024 or 2025? Anyway, at the Frauenfeld, they were going to attend because they wanted to do the good white thing. They wanted to show that they support, etc. And they thought they would be the only white folks there. And they got there and they realized that about 900 of their closest white friends were also there, and they were shocked.
Wow.
Because they thought that it would be pretty much just them and they were doing a good thing. Now, I'm glad they came. Right. And I'm also glad that they realized that there were others, and they realized that this is a project that all people should see.
Now, did you get any information regarding how they felt once they saw
it? Yeah, they thought, they had no idea.
Okay.
The general consensus is we didn't know.
Okay. Gotcha.
We had no idea. It's like, oh, they're more like us than they're not.
Right.
Because as you said, we're portrayed pretty much in one way.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people see. The vast majority of what you see of a black man when it comes to the 6 o'clock, 11 o'clock news is pretty much one dimensional.
Right. So your documentary explores identities and lived experiences. What narratives about black men were you most intentional about challenging or reframing?
I would think right away, black men aren't emotional at all. We don't cry.
Okay.
We don't cry. It's the sickest thing, I think, and the most unhealthy thing that has been perpetuated. But we've often been the perpetuators of it.
Mm.
And our families, mom, dad, they meant no harm. And they were trying to do what they felt was best, and from where they come from.
Right.
Shut up, boy. You don't cry. Suck it up.
Right.
Sweep it under the rug. You can't do that, et cetera, 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 et cetera. And then not understanding that what goes in is going to come out somewhere.
Right.
It's going to manifest, and it is going to rear its ugly head somewhere if we don't deal with it. And so just by holding things in and holding it in and holding it in, you're going to pop somewhere. You're going to bust somewhere.
Right, exactly.
It's coming out somewhere. It's coming out somewhere. Not to go into detail, but whether it's drugs, you know, whether it's drug, whether it's hypersexual something, whether it's substance abuse, whatever it may be,
right.
Whether it's anger and lashing out, and those things often end up incarcerated as a result of many of those things.
Mm.
Because we've not dealt with what's going on. When we felt like releasing, we didn't, because, oh man, I'm a man, I can't cry.
Right.
I can't, you know, I can't deal with that this way. I gotta suck it up. I'm not saying that you go to Walmart and stand at the door with the greeter and cry. I'm not saying that. I'm talking about crying just period.
Right.
Like you alone in a room and you feel that you can't shed a tear because of what you've been taught.
Yeah, yeah. And that goes on, like you said, at large within the community or what have you. And like you say, it is detrimental to us if we can't release. And, you know, we will end up exploding somewhere, most likely at the wrong time. And like you said, you know, maybe being incarcerated or having the police called on you or whatever the case is. And now, how does that... So that would allude to, you know, we also need help mentally, you know, maybe a therapist or what have you. I mean, I've been to a therapist, you know, And it helped me out.
Yeah.
You know, and enough of us don't do that as well.
Yeah. No, no. That's another stigma. That's another thing. We talk about that a lot in screenings and in our post conversations, because one 36-year-old brother, he said after seeing the film, he said, "I felt like I was in therapy for the first time watching this film." And as a result of watching the film, I have given myself the okay, the approval that it's okay to go get therapy.
Right.
And so we include a mental health component expert or somebody, an advocate, in most of our post conversations. We had my good brother, Can I Be Vulnerable, a very popular, well-known black model, a male model who had been dealing with a series of tumultuous experiences. And it was just one after another after another after another. Like, his brother was killed, and then somebody, it just was a series of things, and a very well-known face in the male modeling world.
Okay.
And he said, "Man, I gotta create something. I gotta do something about this, because I know there are other brothers who feel like me."
Right.
And so he created something called Can I Be Vulnerable? And he was on the panel of the screening that the NAACP Image Awards did a month ago in Los Angeles, and he was a part of that panel. And so there's a huge mental health component that connects to this film that I did not do intentionally, that I had no idea that the conversations would lead to conversations about mental health and the well-being of us as a community. So I'm glad that you brought that up. Mental health, seeking mental health counseling is a huge stigma in our community, right up there with Men Don't Cry, with You Don't Cry. You don't get no help. You're not crazy.
Right.
What? He going to see a therapist? Oh, you must be crazy. You better stay away from him.
Right. Yeah. Wow. And you know, people actually think like that, you know, seriously.
Stupid. It is as stupid as can be. But you are right. People do. But it is stupid. I don't use that word often.
Right.
And I didn't say anybody was stupid. I just said it's stupid. Right. We certainly have to get away from that if we're going to be better, if we're going to heal. We have a lot of trauma, you know, as black men in America. You can say what you can say what you want. You can think what you want. You can create some sort of fake data. You can take it out of the museums or whatever. Mm-hmm. You can change websites. You can act as if things that were aren't, but we know what it is.
Right.
And we've had we've dealt with lots of trauma.
Yes. And it's a daily event. Trauma.
Yeah. I don't see it. Yeah. I don't see it leaving. But coping and learning how to deal with it is something that we've got to do better.
Right. Okay. So were there any stories or interviews during your filmmaking process that changed you personally or shifted the direction? Obviously it shifted. You got 8 versions, but
yeah. There are some stories, because even though a lot of the men I know, and even after the first version, so you saw like the first version.
Right.
And since that time, I went and added other people to the documentary. I added more young people to the documentary. Yeah, you got to see the latest version. It's evolved quite a bit. But I would just use one story. I'll pick out one story, and that's Bishop Wells, Nathaniel Wells, who was on the was on the general board of the 12 men who represent the Church of God in Christ around the world.
Okay.
And he was one of those 12 men at the time, right there from Muskegon, Michigan. And I think listening to him, I understood that whether we are 15 years old, mm-hmm. 25 years old, 70 years old, 75, that we intrinsically have a desire, a need to fulfill our destiny for someone else as well. I will say as well, whether they're alive or dead.
Mm-hmm.
In his case, his father. Now, I'm interviewing this man. At the time, Bishop is 77. I think he's about 77 years old at the time.
Okay.
75, 77, somewhere in there. And the raw emotions that came from us talking about his father, he had a need, a desire to fulfill his father's wishes. And he was 70 plus years old.
Yeah.
And so what I got out of it that changed me, Doug, was, and it's okay. That's what I got out of it. It's okay that I'm in my 60s and I have an intrinsic need to fulfill something. It's okay, whatever it is, it's okay. And it's okay because if that's what drives you, then that's what drives you. If that's a part of what drives you, that's a part of what drives you. Whatever it is, it's okay.
Right.
And so it changed me in a way where I think I finally gave myself permission to maybe take things up a notch or three.
Okay.
Because sometimes, and I know somebody may find this hard to believe, and even people who know me may find it hard to believe, but I feel like sometimes I've played small in ways and areas that I didn't have to.
Okay, gotcha.
So if I got an A, I'm going to use a test. I'm not really an academia guy, but I'm going to use academia as an example. So if I got a B plus, it's okay to give myself permission to get the A plus.
Right.
Does that make sense? I'm just using that as a hypothetical.
Yeah, it does.
So sometimes we play small, and it has nothing to do with humility. I hope I'm humble. I hope I am. I believe I am. That is my desire to be. So we're not talking about humility. We're just talking about your abilities. I'm talking about abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're not full speed ahead, you got the throttle totally open.
Mm-hmm.
You know, motorcycle enthusiasts will understand that.
Yeah, 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 definitely.
But it's like, okay, why don't you have it open? Why aren't you fully going for it? So Bishop Wells gave me, it changed me because it just gave me permission. Mm-hmm. And I think when you couple that with age and some maturity, and I was also what is it called when you kill your own stuff? Self-sabotage.
Right.
I was really good at self-sabotaging opportunities and stuff like that because I don't know that I fully believed that I was totally capable for a long time. I thought, okay, well, these people, this just must be a mistake, or they couldn't really, really appreciate this that much. They really like this that much? They couldn't. You know, because I had a thing that I use to deal with life, and that is, I don't care nothing about what the haters talking about, but I also take those who provide praise, I take that with a grain of salt as well. And so I would just go kind of down the middle, right? So not really getting worked up about people praising my work or what have you, and not really fazed about any haters who may not appreciate it. So it's like just doing my thing. Mm-hmm. But I realized along the way, a car battery has two posts. They are what?
Positive and negative.
A positive and a negative. Is the car going to start without either of those?
It needs them both.
It needs them both. And that's just kind of like how I frame my life. And that's just kind of my thought process. You need them both. You need the negative and you need the positive in order to jumpstart your day, your life, your year, your month. And it's finding the balance. There's a balanced positive and negative there, right? And so that's kind of how I view things. And not to really belabor my point, but interviewing Bishop helped me put that thought process in frame.
Okay.
And it helped me.
Okay. So with that battery analogy, you need to go ahead and coin that, because that's an awesome thought. The way he framed it.
I've posted that on Facebook years ago. Uh-huh. And I say it to people when I do public speaking all the time. I've never thought to do anything with it.
Yeah.
So maybe listening to you, I should, because I had never heard it before.
Right.
And I still haven't heard it. And I say it. And I say it to young people when I speak to them about their lives. And I say it to people who think that life can be lived without negativity. It's impossible.
Right.
But like,
yeah. So let me ask you this. So how did you navigate vulnerability and trust with the people who shared their stories, especially on camera? You know what I mean?
That question always comes up.
Okay.
That question always comes up. They say, how did you do that? Well, I think there are a couple of answers, but I'll give you one. The icebreaker I use, and I know it's been a while since you saw the film. What I did was I asked a question: who is the best NBA player in history, in your opinion?
Now, if you're asking me, I'm going to say Jordan, but go ahead.
So you're going, okay, good. Yeah, good. Okay, well, some said Jordan and some said others.
Okay.
But one of the things that it got was comfortability. Because you start out, if you're going to go to Rome, it's best to learn to speak the language in basic terms, hello, and stuff like that, right? You want to know some basic terms.
Right.
If you're speaking to somebody and you're interviewing them, it's best to learn some basic terms, like what it is that they enjoy. What do they like? That's the best way to get to know somebody, is to cater to them. So I knew that all these guys were sports fanatics in some way.
Right.
I know that that's a general, there are most men, you can have a basic general conversation about a few things, and I won't mention what all of them are, but we know sports is one of them, right? Basics.
Right.
They've got an opinion. So I got them comfortable, and man, were they animated. and then when we get down the road, they're comfortable now. And so you can go left, you can go straight, you can go right, you can make a U-turn. And they don't even see what's coming. Ian Wallace, who's Jermail Hill's husband. They do a thing on Instagram, but Ian Wallace, he was on the panel at the NAACP Image Awards podcast, and one of the things that he said was, when he made his comments, was he says, I was arguing with folks, and he was talking about the basketball, the icebreaker. Question.
Mm-hmm.
About who is your favorite basketball player. People argue verbally in the audience whenever they see the film.
Really?
Right away, people in the audience are going, you crazy. They're going, he crazy. What?
While watching the film? Wow.
while watching the film.
Wow, that's some impact for you, but okay.
Yeah. I love it. I look around to see their comment, their faces and stuff, and but yeah, that's what it is, man. If you want people to be comfortable, approach them with what you know they're familiar with. That's how you open things up.
Now, for the people that haven't seen it, black men, so what do you hope that they see and feel when they watch this documentary? And more importantly, what about the non-black audiences? What do you want them to walk away with?
Yeah, I want them to, like I said, I want the black folks to walk away with a sense of pride. I want black women to walk away with a better understanding. And I want Caucasians to walk away with understanding our humanity. And that is, we are humane. We are a group of humane people. And like Dr. Tony Wilson says at the end of the film, we want the same things they want. And that's opportunity. And Bishop Wells says in the film, we want the same thing they want. No more, no less.
Now, what conversations do you hope it sparks when it, regarding in families, classrooms, and even communities?
I'm hopeful that it sparks honest conversation. So whatever that looks like, Doug, as long as it's honest, whatever that looks like, I want it to spark honest conversations. And I think that we deem honesty sometimes as a, and I'm talking about like sweeping things under the rug and stuff like that, you know, and families and generational secrets and all those things. A lot of those things, all they do is harm us, or they catch up with us. They end up biting us. They end up biting us in the butt. Or somebody comes along. I've got so many examples that I could use in this moment, but it's not healthy. And so I'm hoping that, because we deal with some things in the documentary, we deal with someone in the documentary who was in one church with his mom and the guy he thought was his father. And found out ultimately that his father was one of the deacons in the same church.
Whoa.
Who was married to someone else.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow.
Okay, that wasn't in the first version you saw.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Wow.
But whose father was a deacon in the same church, his biological father. So his mom and the man he thought was his father, they attend the church. And his biological father, who's a deacon in the church, is in the same church.
Wow.
And he tells his story and how he put two and two together. And it was all by going down to the Schwinn place on Getty Street. The name escapes me right now.
Oh.
The Schwinn place.
The bicycle rack?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Back in the day.
Back in the day, yeah.
He would get a bike every year. And every year for his birthday, he would get a new bike. And he always saw a red pickup truck pulling off in the distance. And he thought, he got to an age where he thought, wow, that's weird. Every time I get a bike every year, that red truck is pulling off.
Okay.
Well, it was his biological father.
Right.
Getting him a truck. But he didn't know that until he was an adult. And people would talk and whisper, and you know how people gossip and stuff. And he approached his mother. His mother was a good, God-fearing church woman. And she would tell him, no, that's not true. Well, it was true.
It was, right. Woo. Yeah, that's pretty deep right there. And you got him to
open up. So that's just an example.
Yeah.
Of having honest conversation.
Right.
Because they're not, in the end, what purpose do they serve to have dishonest ones? And that's just one example. And by the way, that part of the film did spark honest conversation within that family, which technically is my family. But yeah, the plot thickens.
Wow.
But yeah. But yeah.
Wow.
So so I've got a cousin named Greg, and you know him quite well, and you know the family quite well. Greg saw the film at the Frauenfelder, the last big screening of it, and Greg had no idea. And Greg's mother is telling Greg, well, Greg, that's because Greg is blown away by this story. Greg has no idea that the guy talking is his uncle.
Wow.
So let me just leave that there.
Wow.
Let me just leave that there.
I definitely need to check out the new version. So with this film going all across the country, and who knows what the peak of it is going to be, are there any thoughts of more films to come?
Yes.
Okay. That's awesome. That is awesome. So I just want to make sure that I get this out to the people listening. Make sure you find Black Man. Look for a schedule. I'm sure John has one on the internet somewhere. I'll post it on my website so that you'll know when it's coming to town, when it's coming to your town, and check it out. It's from the first version, it was definitely great, and I am excited about
the
latest version. I'm excited to see that. So as soon as I can see that, I'll see that. Now, how can the people connect with you?
Well, I'm on social media, John Covington, J-O-N Covington, C-O-V-I-N-G-T-O-N. And that's my name on Instagram. That's my name on TikTok. That's my name on Facebook. But also, equally more importantly, is if you go on social media and you hashtag Black Man Film, all one word, everything about the documentary comes up. Everything about where we are, what we got going on, hashtag Black Man Film. And so whenever there's a new city confirmed, that's added. I expect to add some new cities this coming week. Hashtag Black Man Film. Or you can follow me, and of course I add stuff as well. But hashtag Black Man Film is a strong way to follow the brand, All Things Black Man.
All Things Black Man. You heard it from the guy himself, John Covington. Hey, I appreciate you coming on to the show, giving us some insight about the creation of Black Man. And man, I am just anticipating more work from you. As I stated earlier, you are, as you call me, the GOAT. You're the GOAT in what you do. You're the media king, you know, whether it's film, television, or what have you. And that's you.
Thank you, brother.
My buddy, John Covington.
Yes, for life, man. Dougie Doug.
Once again, guys, John Covington. Make sure you look him up on social media. Follow him and put that hashtag in Black Man Film and keep up with the latest updates on the film. Once again, John, I appreciate you coming on to the show. Can't wait for the next time.
Appreciate you, brother.
Yes,
thank you. Already.
All right.